Good morning and welcome to House Calls. Dr. Warner is on vacation this week, so my name is Patrick Hawks, and I'm here with my guest, Dr. John Okerblum, who is Dr. Warner's partner. Thanks for being with me this morning.
Good morning.
Oh,
hold on just a second.
We've got a phone call. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on House Calls.
Yes, good morning. Calling for a friend with a prostate problem.
Okay.
He had a PSA test done with a 4.6 result, but later had a biopsy, which come in as a 7. And
now that was they actually diagnosed cancer.
Yes.
And his Gleason, GLEASON apostrophe S score was 7, which is a score that they get from kind of the major amount of tumor cells they grade them, and then the next major group of tumor cells they grade them, and they'll be like 3 plus 4 or 4 plus 3. So that gives you a Gleason score of 7. That's
okay.
Not their stage, okay?
He was wondering, by taking a biopsy, could that spread cancer? And it seemed like they said they took 6 tests on each side, which kind of seemed excessive.
Well, these needles are pretty darn small, and so the nice thing is they can sample both sides in many places and then actually get a feel for how much cancer may exist there. There is no evidence that has ever come to light that sticking a needle in that cancer can spread it. I've been, you know, everybody's been worried about this since
Right. The
first time we started sticking needles in things, but other than sometimes pulling the tumor cells along the track, like in lung cancer, which actually is very rare also, all the breast biopsies, all the prostate biopsies, there doesn't appear to be any increased spread of the cancer by doing that.
Okay, and then, however, after he had this, he decided against having it removed and has been taking, and that was kind of what he's wondering about, taking sal pimento for about 2 months, I would say, and now his PSA is down to a 2.9. And I was wondering, too, maybe a comment on that. And what's your opinion of having the prostate removed, and what are complications from a prostate removal?
Well, this is a subject that's quite near and dear to my heart. I have metastatic prostate cancer that was diagnosed now a little over 4 years ago, and it had spread out of my prostate into some of my bones, and I've been taking some hormone treatments now for 4 years. Sal pimento is basically a non-prescription form of some of the hormonal therapy that we use for prostate cancer. So the tumor cells can be suppressed for a period of time. Now, how long? Mine have been suppressed for now 49 months by my therapy. Mine will start growing, and the same with the prostate cancer cells in this prostate is eventually they'll escape from the effects of the sal pimento. In terms of the treatment of this, there's several that if the tumor is localized to the prostate, whether we cut it out, whether we externally radiate it, meaning all the radiation is given from the outside, or whether we implant the prostate with radioactive seeds, seems to give fairly close results. Part of the problem is tempering in age. You know, I'm going to be 57. If I'd had the opportunity to have treated mine, we got to presume that maybe I'll live, you know, 30 years longer. So you've got to temper that in. If somebody's 75 and maybe diabetic or got some heart disease, you know, we're not really envisioning that he'll live 25 more years. It's always possible. You never want to discount it. But so then some of the side effects of radiation, which can be long-term, may not be quite as important. The surgery side effects are fairly immediate, but then they kind of go away after time. The sexual impotency is probably the most frustrating for many men, and that can be caused by either the radiation or the surgery. The surgeons are getting quite a bit better at preventing that. The needle implantation of the radioactive seeds seems to cause that less, much less often. The problem with the seeds is that you have to make sure that you've covered all the cancer, and that's always a question. There is evidence that after you've done the seeds, you can still go back in and do the surgery to cut out the cancer. So there's a lot of things that go into this, that decision-making, that are quite difficult. The good thing is that whichever one of those treatments you pick, they're probably all effective.
I've heard, what would be your opinion, I've heard that they've have a maybe a related bowel trouble or bladder problems after having an operation like that. How long would that be prevalent?
Well, most of the time it's fairly short-lived, and meaning a few months to maybe several months. The radiation can also cause some bladder and bowel problems while you're getting it and right afterwards. They've refined some of the radiation techniques to try to stay off of the bladder and bowel, so there's less side effects. But both of them can affect the nerves to the bladder and to the bowel, and where they hook the urethra back together after they take the prostate out can have some scarring tissue. So there's essentially side effects from both, but they're manageable, and most of them tend to resolve with time, except the chronic side effects years down the road.
Now, if you had the scar tissue on your urethra, would that give you trouble with urination?
It can, and so what the urologists do is they can go in and either cut out some of that scar tissue or at least enlarge it by dilating the urethra, and that usually gets rid of the symptom.
Okay. I guess one other question, and could hip pain be related to a prostate problem?
If the tumor is spread, yes, it can cause all kinds of bony discomfort. If it's just localized to the prostate and no spread, even just outside the prostate, it shouldn't be causing any hip discomfort. So before anybody does anything major to the prostate, like radiation or surgery or anything, they'd need to look and make sure all the bones are okay, and probably do a CAT scan or an MRI of the pelvis to make sure that there hasn't been a great deal of spread in the pelvis. With a PSA that low, that would be quite unusual, but not unheard of.
I guess I don't know if you maybe covered that earlier, but say where you had this high PSA test, relatively high at 4.6, and then he got on a salpimento regimen, then it went down to 2.9. Do you think that's getting it under control, or?
Well, I think it's suppressing it for the moment.
Right.
I just wouldn't count on any hormonal, whether it's prescription or over the counter, to control it forever.
Right. I guess one question here, maybe from a personal side, is a person having trouble urinating and maybe getting up lots of times during the night, and then you get on a salpimento, and it seems like that cuts that down by at least maybe half or even a greater. Do you think that's could be, if you didn't have a prostate cancerous or anything, could that salpimento be the answer for quite some time?
Yeah, it can, either having cancer in your prostate, which can slow the flow, but most of the time it's from the enlarged prostate. And getting rid of some of the male hormone with the salpimento will shrink the prostate, just like some of the prescription medicines do that men take. And you should be able to urinate quite a bit better for hopefully a long, long time.
Is that PSA test about one of the better tests that you can take as opposed to, say, maybe a biopsy, or if you had a low PSA test, should you just be satisfied with that?
Well, that's what I've always been taught and thought, but I just recently had a friend that we were scanning for another reason, and he ended up having a positive scan in his prostate, but his PSA was very low. On biopsy, though, he had prostate cancer, so there is no perfect screening test, but the PSA is the closest one we have.
Right. You know, it can kind of give you an idea that if it tests low, you're probably all right. But then again, I guess it's just up to the individual to decide if you want to go the other route.
Yeah, with a positive biopsy, depending on the age of the patient, boy, I'd sure think about doing something permanently. Unless the age is such that, you know, the Swedes did a study where they watched men above 75, I believe, for years and years on no treatment. And the mortality was the same whether they did treatment or not.
Okay.
At 10 years. So in older men, it gets to be very difficult to decide what to do. Now, if they're having symptoms, that's a different story. You know,
right.
If they can't pee or they've got, you know, some local pelvis symptoms, you know, a treatment, but it may just be hormonal, like the salt palmetto.
What might be your local pelvic problem?
Oh, just basically, some of the guys will get pain in their pelvis down low.
Okay.
If it starts to get into some of those nerves around the, down in the pelvis, it can get just a kind of a full feeling and some discomfort down in there.
Would that kind of be like a pain in the rectum or something like that?
I've seen that, yes.
Okay. Well, I guess you've pretty well answered the questions, and certainly thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. On that note, we'll talk a little more about me just while we're at it. We had the Relay for Life in Council Bluffs yesterday, and that's an extremely gratifying experience to see all the survivors come back. I'm a survivor for 4 years. Mine's in quote-unquote chemical remission at the moment. Will it come back? Someday it probably will, and I expect it to, but right now I'm 100% and enjoying life. But we had some people there yesterday that were, their cancers have been either, well, most likely cured. There were a couple people out at 24 years, and I think I saw one at 27, and lots of them in the teens. And cancer diagnoses don't have to be a death diagnosis anymore. In fact, we're curing more than 50% of them now from day one. Some of that has to do with the colonoscopies and the PSAs and the mammograms. A lot of it has to do, though, with just people being more aware and trying to get in if they have symptoms a little earlier. They're just, you know, it'd be wonderful to think that everybody would get a colonoscopy. That's just not going to happen. Somebody asked me the other day about a virtual colonoscopy, which is where they do it with a CT scan. The nice thing about that is we could screen a lot more people. You still have to do the prep, and the prep really is the worst part of the procedure because they put you to sleep anymore for this scope. The other difficulty is if they see anything on the virtual colonoscopy, then you have to have a real one. But I think the big advantage would be is we could screen a large number of people because there aren't enough doctors to do all the colonoscopies. So that would help to decrease some of the risk of colorectal cancer. The mammograms have just been, the track record has been quite good that we can find cancers much, much, much smaller and cure many more of them than we did even when I was in training. When I was in training, a small breast cancer was thought to be about an inch. Anymore, we'll find one that's a third to a quarter of an inch. And so that's much more encouraging than a larger cancer, even an inch one. So that's good. Cervical cancer has almost disappeared. Yesterday would have been my mother's 81st birthday, and she died actually of metastatic cervical cancer. So with the pap smears and things and ladies getting their routine follow-ups, cervical cancer has gotten to be so much rarer. Now with the new vaccine for the young ladies, hopefully it'll even become less rare. Let's see, and then we talked a bit about the PSAs and a lot of controversy about how often to check them, who to check them in, should we...
And tell us again what PSA stands for and what that tests.
It's basically a prostate-specific antigen, and it tests for a protein that that can be made in the prostate. So an enlarged prostate can cause an elevated PSA, and so can a prostate cancer. So it gets to be quite difficult to sort those out sometimes, and they've been trying to refine the test for a long time. And it's, I still think that at least for younger people, 50 to probably 75, that's very reasonable. It's probably reasonable to do it a little beyond that to try to prevent symptoms, if even if we're not going to increase longevity.
Great. Well, you're listening to House Calls. My name is Patrick Hawks. I'm filling in for Dr. Robert Warner. And my guest this morning is Dr. Warner's partner, Dr. John Okerblum, who works at Heartland Oncology and Hematology, oncology being the study and treatment of cancer, and hematology being diseases of the blood. If you have a question for Dr. Okerblum, the number here is 246-5000, locally here in Shenandoah, or you can call 1-800-234-5622. Well, today is National Cancer Survivors Day, and like we've been talking about, I don't think cancer needs to be as scary today as it was maybe 20 years ago. Is that correct, Dr. Okerblum?
Well, it doesn't need to be, but let me tell you from personal experience, it just scares the hell out of you. And, you know, there are certain cancers that are worse than others, obviously, but any cancer that's diagnosed is just really scary.
Sure. Well, tell us a little bit about your experience with cancer.
Well, mine's been actually fairly simple because I've never had any of the major radiation or surgery.
Sure. Well, it looks like we've got a phone call. Good morning. Welcome to House Calls.
Good morning. I am a prostate cancer survivor from 1995, so I'm almost 14 years post-op.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I had it taken out. And it was not a TURP. It was an incision that's about 6 inches long. I'm sure you're familiar with it. 34 stitches.
Mm-hmm. Total prostatectomy.
Yes, sir. And the fellow was worried about after effects. And I, number one, you're going to wear a Foley catheter for about a month. Foley catheter goes all the way up into the bladder and empties into a plastic bag. It just hangs on your leg for about a month. And then they take that out. And unfortunately for me, the night before they were going to take it out, it blocked.
Oh, that's painful.
I know. Anyhow, after that came out, I still had a drip. I wore an external catheter for a while, then I switched to Depends. And I had to wear Depends for about a year.
But it finally did.
And it finally did dry up. Yeah, I'm fine.
How long did you feel like a truck ran over you? In terms of the abdominal symptoms?
They wouldn't let me out of bed for a week.
Yeah, and I think that's changed now. I mean, any of the surgeries anymore, they're getting people up right away.
Like I said, this was in November of 1995.
Right, and
quite a long time ago.
The situation has changed. People are up and around sooner, but you know, anytime you have major abdominal surgery, you're going to hurt for at least 4 to 6 weeks, and you're going to be uncomfortable for several months after that. But you bounce back. Have you had many other bowel or bladder symptoms since then?
No. I do have frequent urination, but that's, I think, overnight because I take a diuretic before I go to bed.
Take a water pill, yeah.
But because they say take it before you go to bed, so I do. Then I have to get up and go run into the bathroom a couple times a night. Anyhow, but as far as the post-op, it's inconvenient. My thinking on the subject was that if they want to look at it, play with it, do whatever with it, they can do anything they want with it in their test tube, you know, but get it out of me, because if it's not in me, it can't spread.
And that's one philosophy, and it's actually quite effective. The other benefit to it is that they can sample some of the lymph nodes and look and see if it actually has spread a ways. The radiation does not do that. You can go in and sample some of the lymph nodes and then do the radiation, but that seems to be kind of a major surgery and then still have the radiation. So
they did check the lymph nodes before they actually took the gland out.
Right, right. And they do that kind of during the same operation. They
right.
take some lymph nodes out, and the pathologist looks at them right then, and as best he can tell with a quick look, can tell whether it's spread or not. If it had spread, they may not have taken out the gland.
They told me that would be the situation.
Correct, yes.
But in any case, I did see the pathology report of the tumor, and it was an adenocarcinoma.
Well, and I hope you're going to attend your local Relay for Life and be a 14-year survivor. That's That's just wonderful.
I'm not even familiar with the program.
Well, the Relay for Life is the National the American Cancer Society's fundraiser events, and they have, Mills is going to be this next weekend. I don't know when Fremont West Page County is going to be. East Page and Taylor do theirs together. And it's basically we get all the patients and families involved, and there'll be a lot of survivors and a lot of memories of people that aren't there. It started out as basically a walking event around a track, and they generate money either with that or other activities to try to promote the cure of these diseases. And I call it diseases because prostate cancer is different than breast cancer, is different than colon cancer. So it's a whole series of diseases that are very similar.
Well, I happen to live in Mills County. I assume it's in Glenwood.
Yep, this weekend at the Glenwood track there at the high school. So you need to get involved.
Okay.
It'd be wonderful.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking to me.
Take care.
Bye.
Great. Thank you for the call. And Dr. Okerblum, I think the Relay for Life in Pottawatomie County was just this weekend, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
it was just yesterday, in fact. Whoever controls the weather, as we know, nobody controls it. It worked great because it cleared off about the time it started. Stayed kind of ugly looking all day, but it didn't ever get real hot. And then everything happened last night before the rain during the night. So it turned out to be a great event. Participation seemed to be down just a little bit, and I think the weather scared a lot of people off. And it turned out that it was no factor, but it was a good time, and got to see a lot of old friends and a lot of old patients that are truly survivors.
Great. Well, Dr. Okerblum, in the last minute, do you want to give your office phone number if somebody has a question for you or wants to make an appointment?
Well, give us a call at 712-322-4136, or you can email me. I believe it's joakerblum@heartlandoncology.com, and be glad to try to answer any questions that we're able to or be of any help that we can.
Great. And if you missed any part of the program this morning, you can listen to that online at heartlandoncology.com and just click on the house calls button. Most of the radio shows are archived there online that you can listen to, or there's a little contact form on the website if you have a question for Dr. Warner, who should be back next week as well.
Better be.
I'm Patrick Hawks. I've been filling in for Dr. Warner. My guest has been Dr. Okerblum. Thank you so much for being on the show this morning.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And you've been listening to House Calls on KMA.
Listen again next week at 9:30 on KMA for Dr. Robert Warner and House Calls. The opinions expressed this morning are those of Dr. Warner and Heartland Oncology of Council Bluffs.